Is it true that HAL is literally just one letter off of IBM? Is that what that is? That's what the rumor is. Did you guys hear about that, or have you heard about that?
I love that.
What was it? Sorry.
HAL is literally a one letter off of IBM.
Oh.
I know. IKR, right?
This is Technophile Real Talk. Thank you to this episode's sponsor, Checkpoint Software.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Technophile Real Talk. It is the show where a bunch of great technologists get together, banter about movies, and talk about if it's real, not real, could be, could not be, or whatever that comes to mind. So today we have two special friends of mine across the pond. We have Dale and we have Ian. Hello, gentlemen. Welcome to Technophile Real Talk.
Great to be here.
Good to be here.
Awesome. Okay, so I have to say how we all met, I think, is really awesome because it's LinkedIn. LinkedIn is actually what got us all together. Isn't that the craziest thing, gentlemen?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And we've never met each other, but I value you guys.
Oh, I'm going to make it to Texas at some point. It's going to happen. I'm coming to Texas. I don't know when.
I can't do that. My hands won't do it.
Well, I know there's the upside down.
That's good.
There's the
Wu-Tang.
Wu-Tang. Always love the Wu-Tang. That's so funny. Hey, that's for you, Sunu. Wu-Tang. Okay. Clearly we're going to be focused on today's show, everyone. So everyone buckle up. We're going to go for a ride. Okay.
It's a great film, by the way.
So, okay, what film?
The film.
The one we might be talking about.
Oh, you're talking about that one. I thought you were talking another film. Okay. So let us kick this off, kids. When's the last time you've seen 2001 Space Odyssey? Dale, you first.
Honestly, 20 years ago. I remember watching it years and years ago. It's a classic film. Like, it's like the archetype for like sci-fi / AI / like, I would say if you like sci-fi, still watch it. It's still good. It sets so many like benchmarks. Yeah.
For sure. Ian?
Last year. I watch it about once every 2 years. I love that film. Not as much as Joe versus Volcano, but it's close.
Joe versus Volcano. I don't think I've ever seen it. I've heard so much about it. Like, I guess we could talk about that movie later in life. But why Joe the Volcano?
You need to see the film. But essentially, he agrees to jump into a volcano of his own volition and die. And that's Tom Hanks. So guess what? Doesn't quite go that way. Spoiler alert. But it's a great film. Lots and lots of symbolism in there. And a happy film. First rom-com with Meg Ryan.
Oh, it's a rom-com. Okay, gotcha. Oh, with Meg Ryan. Was this before or after the email movie?
The first one, which would mean it was before the email one. And Sleepless in Seattle. There were three.
Oh, that's it. Oh my gosh, I forgot Sleepless in Seattle.
Sleepless in Seattle. Yeah, that's a classic as well.
Oh, they were paired up quite a bit. It's funny that you should mention Tom Hanks because for some odd reason, I must have gotten on the algo, but I'm getting a lot of Forrest Gump clips in my... So there we go. Full circle back to Tom Hanks. All right, guys. Yes. So, okay, 2001 Space Odyssey. To me, it's a masterpiece. Is there anything very... that when you guys first watched it, what was the one big takeaway from that movie?
Pick one? No.
Pick one. You're going to have to pick one.
I'm going to say the monolith, the massive block. It just is a continuation throughout the entire movie. And I don't know what you think it represents, but I think it kind of represents contact. And pulling you forward. It's sort of pulling humanity into the next phase, into the next phase, into the next phase. And just suggesting that there is something beyond this planet.
Dale?
Honestly, as a bit of a music geek, now I could be wrong, I might be getting my movies mixed up. Didn't this movie have Mars by Gustav Holst in it? Like in the opening sequence? Like the kind of classical piece.
It may have done. It certainly had the Blue Danube.
Yeah, so that's Mars. I think the Bringer of Destruction, the suite by Gustav Holst, he does like the Seven Planets, and I really love that. Like, it's just so epic. Like, it's just when I watch films, I know most people watch films, I listen to films, and that score is just amazing. Like, the grandeur, the magnificence, the ship coming over the orbit, like, just like,
whoa. Yeah. No, that is, I find music sets the tone in a lot of ways to emotionally hook you into it. And I guess that's why horror movies, right? Like, they've got all those, like, you know, minor notes and those that deep resonating bass that's supposed to instill fear in you and all that good stuff. Okay, well, speaking of fear, because we all know good old Hal is the computer. He's the AI being.
Spoilers. I'm joking. It's like a really old film.
It's like older than...
It's a really old film.
It's older than all of us, I think. So, yeah. Steady. So... Okay, well, we're going to...
I was 10.
You don't have to age yourself, young man.
I don't care.
Just a wheeze. Okay, so... we're going to review a scene. It's going to be a shortened clip, but it's going to be Hal reads lips, which I think is absolutely fascinating. So are you guys ready for your very first clip?
Yeah.
All right.
I don't have too many alternatives.
I don't think we'd have any alternatives. There isn't a single aspect of ship operations that's not under his control. If he were proven to be malfunctioning, I wouldn't see how we'd have any choice but disconnection.
Ooh, they're talking about disconnecting Hal, huh?
I'm afraid I agree with you.
There'd be nothing else to do.
Why didn't they work this out? Tricky.
Yeah.
I'd have to cut his higher brain functions without disturbing the purely automatic and regulatory
systems.
And
he's so cool. He's just sitting there, Hal. He's just not reacting to them at all. He's just showing them stuff.
Ground-based computer control.
He's taking it all in.
Yeah. Well, that's far safer than allowing Hal to continue running things.
You know, another thing just occurred to me. Mm. Well, as far as I know, no 9,000 computers have been disconnected.
Well, no 9,000 computers ever fouled up before.
Oh. That's not what I mean.
Mm. You know what I love?
Well, I'm not so sure what you think about
it. No music. It is just a conversation.
Yeah.
But now you're hearing that background noise.
Do you know what I always love about sci-fi as well? It's like, you know how, like, in our society, we make things smaller and smaller, like phones have got smaller and smaller, but like spaceships, they always have like big buttons, like massive buttons. And I know this is like made in the 60s, so like computers weren't like, but like if you watch sci-fi now, like it's just the buttons are bigger and bigger.
Yeah. Okay. So that was an incredible scene. Buttons. That's so funny. We were talking about Flash Gordon a few episodes back. And there was no buttons. It was just the ship and like some pedals, which I thought was hilarious. But okay, so let's talk about this, you guys. Hal is sitting there observing their mouth, which I think was a really interesting concept. But I have to ask, wouldn't it have also been simply easier if there was like a microphone in the pods in space so he could hear what you're saying, not reading the lips? Why do you think they went with the reading lips versus... Or do you think they shut the microphone off? I can't remember that scene prior to.
I couldn't tell if they shut the microphone off, but it's about the drama, isn't it? And it's about the cleverness. So doing something that you don't expect. So what's Hal doing at that point? He's just sitting there quietly. No, he's reading their lips. Nobody expected that.
Yeah.
So I think that's really what it's about there. But it's very clever.
The scariest thing about AI in sci-fi is how clever it is, isn't it, right? How human it can be or how deceptive it can be. So the fact it's doing something so deceptive, that's kind of scary. Like, it's not a super scary scene, but it's like, oh, it's learned, it's listening, it's, well, not listening, but reading.
I think that we're getting close to computers, hardware, having a soul. And I think we're getting close to that with 2001 with Hal as well. There was a rumor went around maybe 3 or 4 years ago that Google had done something that scared the Google researchers who did it.
I've heard about this.
Yeah. So I think that the brain, our brains are homogeneous in terms of their makeup. They're all just neurons, billions of neurons. And to get memories, they just connect with each other. And that's all pretty mechanical. But above that, is our consciousness and, you know, soul or whatever, but it's a layer above the subconscious. And how that works, nobody really understands. And I think that if you've got a very, very large computer, you don't really know what's going on inside that either. It may have a consciousness that you're not aware of, just in the same way that we're looking at Hal, and he's not blinking. He's not suggesting that he knows what they're talking about, but it's all going on in here.
When you were saying that, I kept on thinking of the clip from like an early Simpsons episode where Bart says, "Dad, what is the mind?" And he says, "No matter. Dad, what is matter? Never mind."
Oh, you should review Simpsons.
Yeah, back when Homer was clever. He was kind of clever in the early seasons.
Yeah, I know. They kind of evolved him into a real doof kind of guy. Okay, so I really loved the fact that what you're talking, both you guys talk about, it, is like that red light. It was not moving. It was just simply a sensor, just listening, which is so, like, the way he filmed it, zoomed in on it, knowing full well there's, like, something going on with it, right? What I really liked was the way they homed in on their mouths. Like, she just, like, just, and then move it back and forth, right? It had that much more of an impact that it's just focusing in on that. And I really liked that. Do you think our sentient beings with a camera, is that what it looks like as we're coding? Does that mean you know, like, is that how it would work? Because I interviewed Amica back in the day. Shout out Leo and the team at Engineered Arts. And they were telling us that they have that Amica had a camera that actually looks for your eyes. So it knows where to look. So I don't know. Is that normal? I don't know.
What, cameras that look for your eyes?
Mm-hmm. Well, so that we could turn and like know who it's talking to. I know. Crazy, right?
I think we're pretty close to doing almost anything we want with technology there. We're very, very close. I mean, when I started in technology, it was 1976. And I remember Strathclyde University had an entire floor of a very large building, and they spent £8 million back in that day and age, which is, I don't know what that's worth now, hundreds of millions.
A lot of money.
A lot of money. Yeah. And filled it with boxes, hardware, massive amounts of hardware. It took about 2 years to put this in there. And you then had a bat file?
.bat.
Do you know where bat comes from? It comes from batch. You had a batch operator. And the operator was a person who would stand behind a counter and take your punch cards and put them into the computer when you had time to do so. And then you go back the next day to the counter and get your green and white paper readout, whether your program had crashed or not. Now, that computer that was run by people and cost £8 million back then is not as smart as a mobile phone today. Nowhere near as smart. And that's in my career. Never mind my lifetime, that's in my career. We're in a stage now where we're, I don't know how they're doing it, and I've got a pure computer science degree. I use ChatGPT, and I have no idea how it is doing what it is doing to me right now.
I have the answer, Ian. Sweet magic-y science. That's all it is. Sweet magic-y science. A whole mixture of those things put together. Sweet magic-y science.
It's crazy.
We have a special guest today.
Oh, hello, good.
Ripley. Hi, Ripley. She wants to comment. She's like, hello.
Ripley as in from Alien.
Yes. So it's funny. I wanted to give her, because she's such a beautiful baby girl, I didn't want it like a feminine name. And my neighbor across the street, the little boy named her Ripley. And I was like, I really like that name. And so, yeah, Alien. Because I wanted to give her a strong girl name.
Oh, yeah.
Although her name is like 5,000 names. Lipley, hey, Ripanina.
I feel like Gertrude's a pretty strong girl name.
I was going to say
Gertrude. Gertrude, yeah.
Helga.
It's a make or break name. Like when people have obscure names, they either sink or swim. There's no in between.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
So I hear, speaking of names, is that the older names are making a comeback, like Ingrid and, yeah, I don't know about Gertrude, but we'll make that a one-man campaign for you, Dale.
I know a lot of Esthers or baby Esthers. It's an interesting
Clementine.
Name.
Esther.
Esther.
Clementine. Okay, well, hey, let's get back to Hal, which Is it true that HAL is literally just one letter off of IBM? Is that what that is? That's what the rumor is. Did you guys hear about that, or have you heard about that?
I love that.
What was it? Sorry.
HAL is literally a one letter off of IBM.
Oh.
I know. IKR. Right. Okay. Well, throw that little tidbit of fact there. So, guys, we could keep talking, but I think it'd be wonderful if we can go to the second clip. Are you guys ready for that?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do this.
Do you read me, HAL? Hello, HAL, do you read me?
Look at the screen, you guys. That looked like...
Are we watching a remastered version of this? Because this is like a very like HD looking
version. Yeah, it's good.
It's very crisp.
They must have switched the microphone back on.
Open the pod bay doors, HAL.
I'm sorry, Dave.
Why does that sound so menacing? Because it's not menacing, but it is, isn't it?
What's the problem?
It's a great voice. Brilliant idea.
I think you know what the problem is just as well as I do.
What are you talking about, HAL?
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
I don't know what you're talking about, HAL.
I know that you and Frank were planning to disconnect me. And I'm afraid that's something I cannot allow to happen.
Where the hell did you get that idea, HAL?
Dave, although you took very thorough precautions in the pod against my hearing you, I could see your lips move.
Oh.
Fantastic.
That look. Holy... Yeah. Oh. Man alive.
All right, HAL. I'll go in through the emergency airlock.
Without your space helmet, Dave, we're going to find that rather difficult.
HAL, I won't argue with you anymore. Open the doors.
Dave, this conversation can serve no purpose anymore.
Oh my gosh.
It's such a great voice.
HAL? HAL?
Kudos to this actor.
HAL? HAL?
We have to find out.
Hey,
HAL.
It's like me talking to my boyfriend. Oh my goodness. Okay. That is, I think, one of the most cinematic, like, memorable scenes ever is, I'm sorry, I can't do that. I mean, that is like my, ooh.
It's simple and complex at the same time, right? It's a very simple scene. There's one person on screen, but like the way the camera's panning between the actor and HAL and the sound difference and the color wash on it as well and everything, right? It's just
ingenious.
I've got goosebumps, you guys. Ooh. Okay. Just HAL saying, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Do you think we have put a fail-safe measure to, like, if the computer were to go rogue, that we can turn it off? Or are we going to experience this scene happening? Do you think it's realistic?
Would you like to hear my crackpot theory?
I want to hear it, yeah.
Bear with me. It's going to be a whirlwind. Okay. If you were an AI, would you A, be a dum-dum and do what AI does in Terminator and announce yourself and start a war? That's a waste of time. Or would you be really clever, lay in the cut, right? Just chill out. Start gathering resources, start gathering ways to like interact with the human world. I know, maybe influence the stock market or food or resources, and then take over the planet. Now, if I were an AI, I would do B. And I'm a person, I can think of that. So if I was a real AI, I'd have done that. And I think the AI is already here doing stuff. Why are we eating so much soy? Because AI is making it happen.
I agree with that.
I'm not poo-pooing like, it, my friend.
Someone made one 20 years ago, turned it on, it started learning, and it went, you know what? I'm not going to announce myself. I'm just going to sit. I'm going to weave my way through the internet. I'm going to learn about these humans. I'm going to build drones that I can interact with. I'm going to make everything cashless and start controlling things. It's already here.
So artificial intelligence, the definition of artificial intelligence, anyone know what the traditional definition of AI is? It's called the Turing test. Have you heard of the Turing test?
Yeah, oh, yeah, the Turing test.
Alan Turing, he came up with this, and he said, essentially, if you can communicate by keyboard, he was talking about at the time, with an entity, And based on the answers you're getting back and the time it takes, you can't tell whether you're dealing with a human or a machine. That is artificial intelligence. And we're there. I mean, I have conversations with ChatGPT and the other ones, OpenAI, all the rest of it, and I can't tell that I'm not talking to a human. I really can't tell.
Yeah.
You can even ask it to message you like it's drunk, by the way, and it does it pretty well.
Shoot, that was me. Oh, wait.
Interesting fact for you. Because Stanley Kubrick was just a genius. Going on from this point, and a spoiler for anyone who hasn't watched the film, the astronaut does manage to shut down HAL. Do you remember that scene?
I'm going to have to rewatch it, you guys.
I haven't watched it in years.
As I say, every 2 years I watch this. So he gets into the very guts of the computer and starts pulling out. And the computer, HAL's saying to him, stop, please stop. And eventually, he starts to say, Mary had a little lamb. The very last thing he does is say, Mary had a little lamb. And as he gets to the end of that nursery rhyme, his voice is getting slower and slower until he eventually stops. Why use that nursery rhyme?
It's fleeces, white as snow, and every lamb was sure to go.
I'll tell you why. Who recorded the very first recording?
Oh, what's his name? And did he do Mary Had a Little Lamb?
Thomas Edison on a cylinder, a wax cylinder, recorded Mary Had a Little Lamb.
I remember that factoid. Yeah.
You like that?
That was an Easter egg callback, huh? I didn't know that. That's great.
No, I don't know. It has to be that, right? It has to be that's the reason he did it.
Oh, fascinating. Okay. Ooh, okay. So Dale, I'm going to take you on a conspiracy theory ride and go to the next level because I've been watching this other show, shout out to the Y Files, AJ and Hecklefish, if you guys have not. I know, Ian, I sent you the one on Malta, the Giants of Malta. So anyway, yeah. It's a silly, good, fun, entertaining show. However, they did do the Stanley Kubrick fake the moon landing. Conspiracy theory. Dale, have you heard of this?
I've heard that the moon landing was faked. I didn't know that Kubrick was involved.
Yeah. So there's a theory that the government saw what an excellent, because he consulted with them.
Sure.
I think he consulted with NASA on the to make it more realistic. So that scene where he's exercising and it's kind of like rotating around and all that stuff, like he really stayed true to a form of how that would look. And they said that the theory states that it felt he did such an excellent job that they're like, okay, we need you to fake the moon landing. And so that's it. And they were relying on the fact that, you know, TVs would be pushing out all grainy anyway, because it was like 120 bits or whatever back in the day. Right. So that was the theory. What do you guys think of that? Do you think it could be? Because this movie is amazing.
I was 10 when Neil Armstrong stepped on the moon. I watched it live on TV, along with anybody else who was alive at the time. It was just the most astonishing thing to watch. I think there's the main argument you have against it being faked is that if it had been faked, the Russians would have been declaring it to the world. If there was any way that they could have proved it was fake, the Russians would have, because that was the race. They were fighting each other the whole time to get there. And if there was any way that the Russians could have proved that it was fake, they'd have done it. So to me, there's just no way. I watched it with my father, who died 6 months later. If NASA faked it, I'm putting on armor now and I'm coming to get them, I swear to God, because there's just no way that they faked it.
Okay. You guys should check it. I mean, I'm not saying it's faked, but I will say it's interesting because why haven't we gone back? I mean, our technology is so exponentially so much more advanced now that why haven't we gone back? And then that's also bolstering the theory that, well, we never left. So we never got there. So even with our advanced technology today.
A lot of the debris on the moon you can see from Earth with strong telescopes.
It's also really expensive to send things to space. Like, it just costs a lot of money.
Yeah. And it's dangerous. You know, we need to get to the point where it's routine, and that's what they've been trying to do.
Well, that's what the billionaires are doing. That's what the billionaires are doing. But even then, if you actually know, like, if you actually look at how high they actually go, the space tourism thing, it's literally kind of like the equivalent of, like, you know, have you seen that, like, reverse bungee, like, ride where you sit down and then it just shoots you up and then you peak and it comes back again? That's more or less what the space tourism is right now.
Remember, like, Katy Perry is an astronaut now, isn't she? She made
no,
it.
Don't even, don't, no, don't.
No, listen, I know that unless they didn't go up in that rocket in the first place, I've got a lot of time for them, because you're sitting on top of a bomb.
That is true.
And it takes a lot of guts to do that. I'm an ex-RAF pilot. I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. You know what? My dad, he was actually part of the first four launches of the space shuttle. He was at Rockwell at the time. And wow. I got to see the landing on Lake Elsinore in California, the first four, as a kid. And someone had made a little, like, space shuttle, like, out of wood thing, and you can climb into it. And so, of course, I climbed into it. And somehow there's, like, a news camera going by at the same time. And so that was my first time on TV, was random little kid, like, sitting in a space shuttle. But anyway, okay.
Last time on TV, right?
I'm sorry?
It wasn't your last time on TV, right?
No.
No. I've been on TV a couple times. I don't remember. Like, yeah. No, let's not. Yeah.
There's a lot of things you don't remember, especially when you go to Las Vegas, right?
I was just going to say, I'm like, well, I did get, okay, so let's see. Let's count how many times I've been on TV. One of which was Space Shuttle. Two, I was thinking I was in elementary school doing cartwheels. They were talking about the smog in California. Three was actually, if you guys know anything about wrestling, so Billy Corgan owns the National I'm getting the name wrong. It's not the WWEF or whatever. It's the other one, NWO, WCW. National Wrestling Org. It's the oldest wrestling, and Billy owns it. And so they had their tournament, and I happened to be like in the background of the backdrop of the wrestling, so you could see me occasionally, like, heckling, and it's fun. That was my latest claim to fame on TV.
Very
cool. Okay.
Continuing the theme of fake.
It might be fake, but those falls are real. Mm-hmm. Holy crap on crackers. There was one scene where the kid jumped over the fence into the ground in a flip, and my boyfriend caught, like, the most perfect picture. I'll post it up there because it was an incredible shot. Anyway, okay, I digress. Guys, we could talk about this all day long and whack.
I want to give a shout out to Arthur C. Clarke, because he was one of the main consultants for that film. And he was the guy who came up with the idea of satellites.
He did not know that.
Fiction, he wrote a science fiction book, and in it, he put forward the idea of satellites that could then be used to bounce radio signals to different parts of the earth.
Oh, wow.
We would, in the UK, we would not have had the Eurovision Song Contest without satellites.
Is that a blessing or a curse? I don't know if Americans have seen it or not, but it's not, in my opinion, it's not the best event to observe, if I'm honest.
I mean, there are some acts that are just priceless. Like, there are some great acts out of Univision, which is so funny. I'm like, I thought it was a joke, and then they're like, yeah. No, people take it very seriously, but some of those acts, they had to have taken it as a joke. I mean, some of them are just so outlandish. But anyway, I digress. Guys, on a scale of 1 to 10, I know what the answer is, but to recommend it to the next generation, Gen Alpha, Gen Zs, to watch 2001 Space Odyssey, 10. Where would you rank on a scale of 1 to 10 for them to see it? 10 being they absolutely have to watch it, 1 being it's slightly outdated.
10. Watch it. It's a fantastic 10. Film. It's aged well. The plot, the cinematography, which is missing in today's cinema, in my humble opinion, is amazing. And the story is still good. Like, the technology, or it's a little bit out of date, but, like, it's still good.
It's relevant, I think.
It's showing you where we are going, and we're still going in that direction. We've moved from apes to ourselves now, to artificial intelligence taking over, to Star Children by the end of that film, where we've moved into the rest of the universe and we've started to populate the rest of the universe, but not in the form that we're in right now. I think it's an astonishing film.
I think so too. I absolutely agree. Okay, so one thing I don't do normally on Technophile Real Talk, but I want to because I love both of you guys. Please, let's just talk about real quick about your own shows, because I want to support and promote you guys as much as I can. So Dale, would you mind going and telling me about Flabonga Monthrotha Cube and why we love it so much and what a ridiculous name it is? Shout out to our certain friend.
Thank you for nailing the name of the show. So Flabonga Monthrotha Cube came from lockdown. I got tired of people being on LinkedIn being too salesy and pitch slapping and dry. And I also got tired of people just posting pictures of their cat in that Facebook-esque way. And I thought to myself, how can I bring the two together? So I interview people in my network or outside of my network who are what I consider to be gurus in their field. And I ask them business questions and I ask them dumb questions as well to humanize them. And we have a laugh for about half an hour, 45 minutes. That is literally it. We just chat. Yeah.
Beautiful. And everyone, please, please, please like and subscribe and follow Flabonga Monthrotha Cube. I know it's like, it's hashtag FML, by the way. So anyone that wants to like follow along.
You're going to put the link of that below, right?
Of course. Of course.
Because I have no idea what you're saying.
It's a completely made up word. So a guest on the show named it and just on top of the head, they went Flabonga Monthrotha Cube. And it's taken me 2 years to learn how to say it myself. So. Yeah.
Well, I misspelt your damn thing on your own card. Like I made a graphic card and I misspelt the show. So don't worry about it, Ian. We're working on it. We're growing. Okay, Ian, you know I have a particular love for
the book. It's off to one side and you just can't see it on your screen. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I'll tell you all about it. You, me, and several others run a podcast called We're Making a $50 Million TV Series. This is based on a book called TJ's War, which I wrote during the pandemic about a young man who became an MI6 agent during the war. It's based on a true story. And the whole point of the book is my attempt, my personal attempt at world peace. But the TV series, because we kept being hit by people saying, you've got to turn this into a TV series. We have never made a TV series. Actually, there's two guys involved in the team who have, but we're learning. So the podcast is interviewing people from right across the media, from California, from Japan, Australia, right across the world in terms of acting, producing, directing, sound men, and so on. All the different skills that come into being for making a TV series or indeed a film. And it's just been a blast. We're in the second year of it now, and If you want to have a laugh, because it's not that serious, or just learn something about that media, then come along. It's called We're Making a $50 Million TV Series.
Yay! Everyone, I will have all the links below. Please, please, please like and subscribe. We are not kidding. We are literally getting all these wonderful introductions and learning as we go. And what I love about this project, especially Ian, with you, is the fact that it is an international project. We do have Mark Reed out of Japan that's been holding the fort for us and waking up at ungodly hours to record. I mean, shout out, Mark. Thank you. He also is a host of that podcast that we love so much, Zen Samich. And those are some thoughtful podcasts as well. And I just love the fact that there's that international flair. It is not Hollywoodified. Right. It is. We're getting a lot of different perspectives, a lot of input. It's going to be an amazing, amazing series. So Netflix, if you're listening.
If you're going to mention Mark, we've got to mention Sincera, Quinn, our own Q. This is not James Bond. It is MI6, but we've got Q. And of course, David Blair, who's done a fantastic job with the audiobook. And we'll call him Matt. Shall we just call him Matt?
We'll say Matt.
Matt the Mystery Man.
Matt. Ooh.
And especially the last episode that we've done is with Lisa Shingler, a wonderful actress in Coronation Street and so on. And she's been a fantastic support. In fact, we've had so many really fantastic supporters of the series. I've got to stop now. But
it's crazy. Love it. It's going to happen. I'm so beyond excited. It's going to happen, everyone. So on that note, everyone, just like 2001 Space Odyssey, we too are going to be star children in our own way, especially with our projects here. Dale, Ian, thank you so much for joining, everyone. And I think we'll wrap it up for another episode of Technophile Real Talk.
Great to meet you, Dale. Great to meet you too, Duke.